It's our pleasure this evening to have Dr. Terry Phillips speak to us on the subject of where was biblical Edom. Dr. Phillips has a PhD from Cornell University in experimental astrophysics, took a Master Divinity work with us here at Biblical Seminary, and then from 1976 till 1979 was with the American Institute of Holy Land Studies in Jerusalem, first working on a Master of Arts in Hebrew, and then serving as instructor in their biblical geography course, a short course in that. And so he has a lot of experience in the geography of Bible lands, and he's going to speak to us this evening on the subject, where was biblical Edom?
Thank you, Bob. For 2 years, I was able to teach geography at the American Institute, and whenever we got into a discussion of the southern part of Israel, I kept putting Edom in the traditional place, and then after a while, through a combination of factors, found out that for 2 years, I was really only giving about half the story. If you look at a number of maps, whether they be in the Bible or whether you see the maps that are in front of you today, you take a look at the map over on the corner and look down towards the bottom right, and you find Edom being southeast of the Dead Sea, in what today would be called southwestern Jordan. And then if you took a look at this particular map over here on the wall, and you hunt around for Edom, you again pretty much see it in the same location. And as I say, if you look at most Bibles that have maps, or you take a look at many geography books or many books on the history of Israel and try to see where Edom is, look it up in the maps, and you'll find that it's usually represented as these maps have it, over in the southeastern part of the Dead Sea, up in the higher plateau area in what is present-day Jordan. My thinking about this subject basically started as follows. There were two things that were going on at the time. This was in 79, just before I was ready to come home. First of all, there was a graduate student by the name of Bruce Crew that was at the Institute who had a background in farming and also in plant husbandry. And he was very interested in some of the ancient sites that are down in the southern part of Israel, the area that is called the Negev today. He was interested in how the people could survive down there. And he became, through that, very interested in a group of people called the Nabataeans, who existed in the land shortly after the time of Christ till the coming of the Byzantines, about the 4th century A.D. He wanted to write a thesis on Negev agriculture, on this desert agriculture of the Nabataeans. And that got him interested then into the whole history, got him introduced into the whole history of what was going on down in the Negev. Meanwhile, about a month or so before we left, we had an opportunity to go down to the Negev to take a trip, and I wanted to read up on a number of things so I would be a little bit more accustomed to what I would be seeing and what would be there. And I read an article. I even forget exactly where it was. The only thing I remember, it was in Hebrew. And I read it, and it proposed the idea that maybe the southern part of Israel was part of Edom, part of Esau, part of Seir, Mount Seir. All of those three terms are used for the same place in the scripture. And tying that together with the trip and also with Bruce's willingness to work on that area for his master's degree, I jotted down a few notes and gave it to him. And I said, why don't you hunt this down, trace it down, see if the person really has a good idea or not. He really took the ball and ran with it, and one whole segment then of his thesis concerning the Nabataeans and desert agriculture is dealing with the location of the nation Edom. So a lot of the work, a lot of the material that I'll be presenting tonight is really based on the work that he has done, which has come out in a thesis for the American Institute of Holy Land Studies. First of all, however, let me present the traditional view of the land of Edom, and after I present that, I will present what I feel to be other evidence, which is very valid in terms of locating Edom, not so much in the western part of the Rift Valley here, which is called the Arava, not so much in the eastern part, but in the western part as well. And I'll try to make the case that Edom not only included the traditional place where you find Edom located on the maps today, but really came quite a bit over to the western part, south of Beersheba, and sort of was butting up against the area that we think of as being inhabited by the Philistines. This type of study, I think, is useful for a couple of reasons, but probably the main reason is the technique that is used in investigating biblical sites can be very handy then in investigating anything in the scripture. And basically what I'm going to do is use the following technique. I'll see what the scripture says concerning Edom, then I'll see what the extra biblical sources say concerning Edom, and also get into a little archaeology concerning the Negev and try to tie that into material that we know concerning Edom, and then try to make some general conclusions about the whole subject. So basically, I'll be using the slides, I'll be using the map, I'll be reading from the Bible, and there'll be a real three-ring circus up here before I'm finished. Let's look at the traditional view of the location of Edom. And you can hardly talk about the subject without first turning to Genesis chapter 36, which I will do. You might want to follow along if you have Bibles with you. If not, don't worry about it. I'll be reading the relevant verses. Chapter 36 deals with the descendants of Esau. And in verse 1, in verse 8, and in verse 19, Esau is connected with Edom. Verse 1, this is the account of Esau, that is Edom. Verse 8, that was verse 1. Verse 8, so Esau, that is Edom, settled in the country of Seir. And here we have the three names, Edom, Esau, and Seir, tied together in one place. And then you look down to verse 19, and it says, these are the sons of Esau, that is Edom, and these were their chiefs. So again, you have that connection between Esau and Edom primarily in this particular part of the scripture, but also tied into this is the country of Seir, and we'll read more about that later. Take a look at Genesis, or rather in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verses 8, 12, and 22. Deuteronomy 2, 8, 12, and 22. In the first couple chapters, Moses is telling us a history, giving us a history of the travels of the Israelites as they came out of Egypt and eventually from Egypt moved across the Sinai Peninsula, came up to the southern part of Israel. We're going to make an attack into the land, but were beaten back due to disobedience, wandered around the Sinai Peninsula, the northern part, for 40 years, and then eventually went around Edom and Moab and came in across Jericho. And Moses is giving us a history of what has occurred. In chapter 2, he again gives us some indications as to where Seir might be located and how it ties in to Edom. I'll start with verse 1. Then we turned back and set out towards the desert along the route to the Red Sea, as the Lord directed me. For a long time we made our way around the hill country of Seir. And then in verse 12, Horites used to live in Seir, but the descendants of Esau drove them out. But they destroyed the Horites from before them and settled in their place, just as Israel did in the land the Lord gave them as their possession. And then down in verse 22, the Lord had done the same for the descendants of Esau, who lived in Seir. When he destroyed the Horites from before them, they drove them out and have lived in their place to this day. Basically, again, these verses, along with the verses in Genesis, just tie together Esau, Edom, and Seir, as we have seen before. So the connection between these three countries, I think, is fairly clear. And if we can locate any one of them, then in effect we have located where Edom. If we locate Esau, then we know where Edom and Seir is located. If we locate any one of the three, that gives us an idea where all three are located. And it appears to be in the same place. And basically the scenario that we have is that the descendants of Esau, who was called Edom, conquered this place called Seir, where the Horites used to live, drove them out, and lived in that particular location. And now our effort's going to be to try to find where that location is located. Some cities are mentioned as being in Edom and in Seir. And I won't go through the verses where they are mentioned. Let me just mention some of the cities. Bozrah, 1 Chronicles 1:44. I'll just give one verse, and then you can look at a cross-reference for the other verses as well. Bozrah, B-O-Z-R-A-H, 1 Chronicles 1:44. Elot, on the coast of Edom, in 1 Kings 9:26. 1 Kings 9:26, Elot is said to be on the coast of Edom. Elot is put down here in the northern part of the Gulf of Aqaba, or the Gulf of Elot, if you're an Israeli, down where Etzion Geber is given on this particular map. Teman and Dedan, T-E-M-A-N and D-E-D-A-N, are mentioned as being in Edom as well. Again, the Chronicles passage that I mentioned initially, 1 Chronicles 1:45 and also 1 Chronicles 1:53. All these cities, however, have been located because of the names being preserved in the location of modern sites All of these cities are east of the Arabah, between the Dead Sea and Eilat. By the Arabah, again, I just mean this deep rift, this valley that runs from the southern part of the Dead Sea all the way down to the northern part of the Gulf of Aqaba. And all of these cities are over to the east in the hills. From the rift, you go east, you go up about 4,000 or 5,000 feet, and the cities are located in that area. And hence, it would be reasonable to assume that Seir or Edom or Esau was located in the position mentioned on these maps, that one over there where Edom is located, and also the one here, near the ancient site of Petra or Sela, which is also, we are told, was located in Seir as well. And then finally, the story of Jacob and the meeting of Esau also gives us an indication where Esau might be located and where the land of Seir might be located. In Genesis 32:3, in fact, the whole story, Genesis 32 and Genesis 33, gives us some information concerning Esau and Seir. We're told that Esau was from Seir. Here's the scenario again. Over here in northwest Mesopotamia, Jacob has gotten sick and tired of working for Laban and decides he's going to split. So he leaves and he starts coming down across Bashan on towards the south, but he recognizes that he's going to have to meet Esau. In fact, you kind of get the story that he wants to meet Esau. Esau is moving up from the south. Here in the area of Gilead, there is a deep ravine, a deep wadi, a dry riverbed, called the Jabbok, and there's a place called Mahanaim and Peniel in the Jabbok. The story tells us that as Jacob is moving down towards Esau, down towards the south, here's where the Jabbok is located, across here in the land of Gilead. He comes down to Mahanaim. He's going to cross the wadi at that point, where there's a ford and the stream that does exist. And at that point, he has a dream, and he's wrestling with the Lord. Not so much a dream, but he's actually wrestling with the Lord at that particular point. And the Lord tells him, don't worry about meeting your brother Esau, because I will be with you. From that point, he heads on down south after crossing the Jabbok, and he meets Esau. Esau, we are told, is from Mount Seir. After they meet, it turns out to be a very happy meeting. Esau leaves. He goes back to Seir. We're told in Genesis 33. And Jacob tells him, you go back to Seir, and I'll meet you there. Now, whether Jacob really meant it or not, we don't know, because Jacob doesn't continue going down south. He splits towards the west, goes to Sukkot, and then eventually moves up to Shechem, which on the map over here is, you can sort of see where Manasseh, just under Manasseh, half-tribe is listed. At Shechem, he has trouble with two of his sons and the Shechemites in the story of Dinah, so he leaves there, and he goes down to Beersheba, which is down south, and he settles there. Is that an indication that Mount Seir might be near the area of Beersheba? Or was Jacob just trying to get about as far away as he possibly could from the Shechemites and manage to move south? And really the situation that you might have is that Esau is over here where Edom is located. Jacob is by Beersheba, and there's no connection between the two. Hence, what you have is the following. From this particular material in the scripture, let me have the first slide, if you please, and I'll put it all on the screen. Here's a picture of a map from the Macmillan Bible Atlas that shows the relative position of these areas, and you'll notice over on the bottom right-hand side of the slide is where you have the location of Edom, right along here. Here again is shown the Arabah, or the Arabah, term you should be familiar with because I'll be using it quite a bit, along with the area called the Negev, or the Negev, as it's pronounced today. This area south of Hebron, up near the top of the screen. Notice Edom is considered to be east of the Arabah, and some of the cities that I mentioned, like Bothra, Sela, Punon is also mentioned as being in Edom, Teman, etc. You kind of get the idea that classical Edom, or the position of Edom, was south of the Zered, which is a huge canyon that leads into the bottom part of the Dead Sea, from the Zered down to Eilat, which is down here to the south at the head of the Gulf of Eilat, and then in north-south extension, and then east-west extension, goes from the Arava over towards the east, where there are some basalt plateaus that are very dry and hardly anybody lives there. And this is the scenario that you have as to where Edom is located, and this is what you find in most of the maps. Is that correct? Yes, it is, as far as it goes. But there's a lot more, and the lot more is what I want to discuss from here on. Now, if I could have the lights, please. I want to read a few more passages here in Scripture. First of all, critical to the whole discussion of where Seir is located, where Edom is located, is going to be the location of Kadesh Barnea, because of some geographical remarks that are made concerning the relative positions of Kadesh Barnea and Mount Seir. First of all, I want to read two border descriptions. The first one comes from Numbers, chapter 34, and the second one is going to come from Joshua, chapter 15. Numbers chapter 34, verses 3 to 5, give us a description of the southern boundary of the land of Canaan. And it goes as follows. Numbers 34, 3 to 5. Your southern side will include some of the desert of Zin along the border of Edom, or literally running along the border of Edom. On the east, your southern boundary will start from the end of the Salt Sea, crawl south of the Scorpion Pass, continue on to Zin, and go south of Kadesh Barnea. Then it will go to Hazar Adar and over to Azmon, where it will turn, join the Wadi of Egypt, and end at the sea. I have a slide on that, and I'll put it on in just a few minutes, but let me just show you basically what you have in this particular map. Over here you have the southern part of the Dead Sea, and the border basically runs towards the west, over towards the big wadi called the El Arish that drains the Sinai Peninsula. So basically the border is here. But you notice in the description, Kadesh Barnea is located west of the southern part of the Dead Sea. It is located west not only of the Dead Sea, but also of the Scorpion Pass and what they call the Wilderness of Zin. And then Joshua 15, 1 to 4, this is the southern border of the tribe of Judah, which inhabited the area just north of Beersheba. And you see the following description, which is very much like the one that we just read in Numbers. For the people of Judah, their southern boundary started from the bay at the southern end of the Salt Sea, that is the Dead Sea, crossed south of the Scorpion Pass, continued on to Zin, went over to the south of Kadesh Barnea, then ran past Herzon up to Adar and curved around to Karka. It then passed along Azmon and joined the Wadi of Egypt, ending at the sea. This is their southern boundary. Same thing again. As you move west away from the Dead Sea, you run across Kadesh Barnea. Now, maybe take a look at this. The border runs from here, and it's going to go over towards the west. Maybe we could move the slide a little bit. This is the Arava. This is this big rift that connects the Dead Sea along with the Gulf of Eilat. And you're looking across towards the east, towards the high mountains that come up from the Rift Valley. And this is the traditional place where Edom is put. Take a closer look at it. You see it's a very rugged land, although there are areas in various wadis have water in them. There are various springs in the area. But this is the land that we normally think of when we think of Edom. From the southern part of the Dead Sea, you look again towards the east, and you can see the Zered coming down here. And the water in the Zered has produced a very fine oasis by the name of Zoar, probably where the biblical site of Zoar was located. These are just salt pans that are in the southern part of the Dead Sea. But from the Dead Sea, you are looking east, again towards Edom, and it extends off to where you see the skyline where the basalt plateaus begin. Down in the other end, in the southern end of the Rift Valley, you have Eilat. This is the modern port on the right towards you. And you can also see Aqaba in Jordan located over here. And again, this would be considered as part of the land of Edom. The close-up of Eilat. Now, this is the border description that I read. You start from the bay that's in the southern part of the Dead Sea, and you continue off towards the wilderness of Zin, which is in this area, along with the Scorpion Pass, which is about here, continue on towards Hadad Adar, Kadesh Barnea, Karka, Azmon, and then finally go to the Brook of Egypt, this El Arish Wadi that drains the Sinai Peninsula. Don't be bothered by the arrows here. I just picked this map describing some other event in biblical history, but the border was on it, so I decided to take a shot of that. Notice again where Edom is put, over to the east of the Arabah. Now, this is basically what it would look like if you were to trace the border with an airplane. You start at the southern part of the Dead Sea, which is over towards the right. You're looking up towards the northwest. Again, a fairly rugged area. All this plateau area up here is called the Negev. From there, you continue through the wilderness of Zin. You can see that the wilderness of Zin is very nicely shaped with cliffs on both sides. The border would hug this particular side, the northern part of the Zin. Goes by the Scorpion Pass. Actually, it's called the Ascent of the Scorpions, and that's modern road that's near the same position here. You can see that anybody who would travel that area would have quite a climb ahead of him. Coming out of the Zin, looking out towards the east, the Scorpion Dead Sea would be up here. The Scorpion Pass is here. We come by, we're climbing out of the Zin. Going across the Negev, some shots of the Negev give you an idea of what that is like. One of the wadis, it's a nice connecting wadi between the eastern part and the western part of the Negev, and you can imagine a lot of people going down through there. This is where we took the trip. Another trip that was taken with a converted potato truck takes us close to the area of Kadesh Barnea. Now what you see here is the type of land that the Israelites were seeing for about 40 years before they got into the land that they had been promised. Finally, you arrive at Kadesh Barnea. There is a spring around the bend over here, and the water coming down the bottom of this particular canyon gives rise to the various fields and the vegetation that you see. The site itself is in this particular position, and again, you can see what the area around it is like. The ancient site down in the wadi is being excavated. Those of you who read Biblical Archaeologist Review, about a year ago, there was an article by the excavator, by Rudolph Cohen, discussing some of his results. Here's the view from the level of the wadi with an ancient wall, an important site in Judean history because that's such an important location in terms of trade routes and fortifications. One of my friends, when we went to see the place, with the wadi in the background. Also, as you continue from Kadesh Barnea and begin to move towards the west, you come across a mountain that a good geographer in Israel by the name of Yohanan Aharoni thought was Mount Hor. And finally, you go to what is thought to be Atzon Adar. And from there, you go to the River of Egypt, or to the El Arish Wadi, which drains the Sinai Peninsula off in the distance into the Mediterranean. This is basically what is considered to be the southern border of Israel and also the northern border of Edom. Now, with that in mind, notice the following allusion. Take a look at Numbers 20, chapter 20, verses 14 and 17, and you find an interesting statement concerning the location of Kadesh Barnea. Numbers 20, verse 14. Moses sent messengers from Kadesh Barnea to the king of Edom, saying, "This is what your brother Israel says. You know about the hardships that we have come upon. Our forefathers went down into Egypt, and we lived there many years. The Egyptians mistreated us and our fathers, but when we cried out to the Lord, he heard us, he heard our cry, and sent an angel and brought us out of Egypt. Now we are here at Kadesh, a town on the edge of your territory." Now, that's an interesting statement, because if it turns out that Edom really is over here on the eastern part of the Arabah, then Kadesh Barnea should be someplace in the Arabah if it's plastered up against the border of Edom. However, we know that Kadesh is really to the west, over here in the Negev. And yet Moses tells the king of Edom, "Here we are, sitting right on your border." Is it not a reasonable conclusion to make that Edom may have extended farther west than where it is put? I think so. You take a look at some of the other verses in this particular passage as well. Verse 22, the whole Israel Israelite community set out from Kadesh and came to Mount Hor at Mount Hor near the border of Edom. And yet Mount Hor, again, is located near Kadesh Barnea. And finally, well, that was it, 22 and 23, Mount Hor and Kadesh being together and the two of them being near the border of Edom. This, to me, I think is very strong evidence that Edom really extended from the Arava westward, included part of the Negev, and came all the way to Kadesh Barnea, which is located basically in this location on the map that you have before you. Another indication, a story that we're familiar with in Genesis chapter 14. This is the battle of Kedorlaomer with some of the people that were rebelling against him, the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah and the five cities on the plain south of the Dead Sea being part of them. It's interesting to read what he does. I'm reading from verses 5 to 7, Genesis 14. In the 14th year, Kedorlaomer and the kings allied with him went out and defeated the Rephaites and Ashtaroth-Karnaim, the Zuzites and Ham, the Emites and Shaveh-Kiriathaim, and the Horites in the hill country of Seir, as far as El Paran near the desert. Then they turned back, or they returned, and went to En-Mishpat, that is Kadesh. Another name for Kadesh Barnea, En-Mishpat, the spring of the judgment. And they conquered the whole territory of the Amalekites, as well as the Amorites who were living in Hazazon Tamar. And the impression that you get as they come down here in the southern part, wipe out some of the people here, Kadesh Barnea, wipe out the Amalekites, and the Amalekites are, again, people that we know from Scripture were in the southern part of Judah, south of Judah, and again, that puts them in the Negev. That doesn't put them all the way over in Transjordan in the southeastern part of the Dead Sea. Again, another indication that Seir or Edom may be south of Judah. The conquest of the land meant that each of the tribes, in many times, had to hassle for themselves in order to conquer the land that was actually given to them by the Lord through the lots that were cast by Joshua. And in Judges chapter 1, we find the people of Judah going up to get their land, and they tell the people of Simeon, why don't you come with us, help us conquer our land, and then we'll come and help you conquer your land. That is given in Judges chapter 1, verse 3. Then in Joshua 19, verses 1 to 9, after the people of Judah finished conquering their land, they turned around and helped the people of Simeon conquer theirs. Joshua 19, 1 to 9, you find the cities that are in Simeon. And the cities that are mentioned as being in Simeon are Beersheba, Horma, Ziklag, Sheruhen. Again, these are cities that are known to be in the southern part of the Judah area, basically off to the western part of the Negev. The verse about the conquest is 1 Chronicles 4:41, which says the following. The men whose names were listed came in the days of Hezekiah, king of Judah. They attacked the Hamites in their dwellings, and also the Munites who were there, and completely destroyed them, as is evident to this day. Then they settled in their place, because there was pasture for their flocks. And 500 of these Simeonites, led by Pelatiah, Neriah, Rephaiah, and Uziel, the sons of Ishi, invaded the hill country of Seir. They killed the remaining Amalekites who had escaped, and they have lived there to this day. Where is Simeon located? Just to remind you again where we are, Kadesh Barnea in this area with the other cities that I mentioned. Beersheba is here, and this is the area known as the Negev that is being discussed. When you look at where Simeon is located, notice he's in the southern part of Judah, over to the west, western part of the Negev, the southern part of the land of Canaan, and again, the cities that are mentioned, plus the Amalekites being there, the whole story takes place in Seir, and yet it's fairly clear from that particular story that Seir should be located over here, south of Judah. Now, some other interesting things. Could I have the lights again, if you please? In the time of David and Solomon, David and Solomon were very interested in protecting the southern part, the southern approaches into Judah, especially from nomads that would come into the area, and also because there were a great number of trade routes that would go from this area far to the east in Transjordan, and they would cut across the Negev and come over here to Egypt. Great number of trade routes here, great number of desert people here. In the time of David, who is consolidating the kingdom, he is interested in protecting himself against the desert people, but he's also interested in picking up the trade from the trade routes. You have the following statement. This is 2 Samuel chapter 8, talking about the fortifications that David built in Edom after he finished wiping them out. Great slaughter. It says the following, 2 Samuel 8, 13 and 14. And David became famous after he returned from striking down 18,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. The Valley of Salt, again, being the southern part of the Dead Sea. By the way, there is some indications in some manuscript that instead of the reading Edom, instead of Edom, it should be Aram, which is up in Damascus. But whether you accept that or not, verse 14 tells us it was Edom because David put garrisons throughout Edom, and all the Edomites became subject to David. The Lord gave David victory everywhere he went. Where in this particular area are there fortresses that may date from the period of David? Here again is a map showing this particular area with the modern road system on there. Let me just pick out Beersheba, which is up here, and the tribe of Judah just a bit to the north. And down here is Kadesh Barnea. The triangles that you see are forts, small fortifications, that basically sit astride many of the trade routes and the natural passes that go through the land to the south. I was going to say the land of Edom, but go through the Negev. These particular forts look a little bit like this. Let me show you just the area where the forts are located. This is the so-called High Negev. As you get farther down south, you go up in elevation. And many of these ridges have various forts on them. Here's one at Hazon Adar, one of the cities that was mentioned. You can see the relative size of the fort, kind of a oval pattern with some people on there to give you the perspective controlling this plain and one of the passes that comes in a bit away from where the fort is located. Nice wall, so-called casemate wall, a double wall. People were serious about their fortifications. Another one, not quite so large, in another area, as you pass by, up on the hill. And again, the wall is evident. This is a diagram of the different kinds of forts that you see. Some of them, as I say, are oval. Some of them are square-shaped, and they're divided down the middle. Most of them have this casemate wall. And the interesting thing is, they all date from the time of David, and they're all in the Negev. Forts like this have not been found in Transjordan, in southern Transjordan. Part of it may be because that area has not been examined as thoroughly as the Negev, but those who have gone through that area have not found this type of fort system. There's also some strange pottery that comes from that area, this kind of thick, crumpled sort of pottery, the so-called Negev ware, which is a few steps removed from the high-class pottery that you find north of the area of the Negev. And this particular pottery shows is made by somebody who really was not as clever at making pottery as you find to the people of the north. This is the type of pottery you might find from a nomadic type of people that would be inhabiting the area down to the south. Interesting thing that some of the excavators have said, this particular one by the name of Meshel, says the following concerning the date of these forts. I'm starting to read from this position. Aharoni was one of the initial investigators of the land of the Negev and found a number of forts, and he thought initially they were from David's time. And then he changed his mind and he said, no, they're probably from Saul's time, built in order to protect the people of Judah from the Amalekites that would be coming up from the south. However, when Meshel and later on Cohen, and now the two of them together, investigated the fort, they say the following. We therefore concur with Aharoni's earlier thesis, postulating David or Solomon as the initiator behind this royal project, and disagree with Rothenberg's suggestion that the Negev fortresses were erected by the autochthonous Negev tribes in the pre-monarchic period. Likewise, we differ with Aharoni's latest theory, wherein he called these sites Israelite forts, while nevertheless dating them prior to the monarchy, i.e. early or beginning of the 11th century. Basically what they're saying is that Aharoni was right in his initial evaluation. These forts are from David's time, and they fit in very nicely with the 2 Samuel 8 passage, making this land fortified and building these forts in the land of Edom. Again, this is in the Negev. It is not over in Transjordan. Those are basically the biblical references. That's right. Biblical references. Now, for some extra biblical references, I want to turn to some of the Egyptian documents, and then just a few of the Assyrian documents, some notes from Josephus, and then I'll finish harassing you with this. First of all, from the El Amarna text, a site in Egypt called El Amarna, where a cache of tablets were found, written in cuneiform, a writing of that particular time, and these are letters that are being sent to the Pharaoh in Egypt in the 14th century, in the 1300s, basically Amenhotep III and Akhenaten, telling him that his land of Palestine was being attacked by people called the Habiru and that he ought to do something about it. And in one of these letters, he says the following. This leader of one of the cities in Palestine is writing to him and basically complaining about what is happening, about the disorder that is going on in his land. And notice what he says, I delivered 10 slaves into his hand, meaning some other king, Shuta, the royal commissioner came to me, 21 maidens, and 80 captives I delivered into the hand of Shuta as a gift for the king, my lord. Let my king take thought for his land. The land of the king is lost. It is entirely. It is taken from me. There is war against me as far as the lands of Seir and as far as Gath Carmel. Gath Carmel, probably located near the Carmel Range, which would make it to the north, and the land of Seir is to the south, because Egyptian control did not extend all the way to Transjordan. They were interested in the main routes that came from Damascus on down through the land of Israel, through the Sinai Peninsula, through the Negev, but not over in Transjordan. All of these, by the way, are in Pritchard. Interesting segment here from one of the papyri that have been found, the so-called Anastasi papyri, which come again from the 13th century. That's the next one. This is from Ramses III, who was attacked by the Philistines when they tried to take Egypt, and then he settled them in the land that we normally think of as Philistia, basically from Gath up to Ashdod along the coast. And the first paragraph tells us about that particular military exploit. Down here, though, however, notice the following. I destroyed the people of Seir among the Bedouin tribes. I razed their tents, their people, their property, and their cattle as well without number, pinioned and carried away in captivity as a tribute of Egypt. I gave them to the Ennead of the gods as slaves for their houses. Here's the interesting thing. He is taking land and giving it to the Philistines. Where is this land coming from? Would it not be reasonable if he is tacking this on to his discussion of what he did with the Philistines, that some of the land that he gave to the Philistines was actually the land of Seir? So he moved in, moved out the Bedouins who were living there, the people of Edom, and moved them. He made them slaves in the houses of the gods in Egypt, and then gave some of this land to the Philistines who were in the area. This particular land would be the western part of the Negev again. Here's the copy of the Merneptah, of the Anastasi papyri, just basically saying that some Bedouin from the tribes of Edom had come and passed some of the fortresses, the fortress of Merneptah and some of the other pharaohs of Egypt, in order to be able to water their flocks in one of the tributaries of the Nile. And this letter is going to the pharaoh and informing him of that. Why would people in southern Transjordan be going all the way to the Nile in order to water their flocks? Again, you get the impression that they're really over in the Negev, fairly close to Sinai and maybe even farther west. Now, some of the Assyrian documents from Adad-nirari and then from Tiglath-Pileser, basically what I want to do here is show you where Edom is mentioned as being in connection with the other nations that are conquered by Adad-nirari in the 8th century. Notice what he is conquering, all these cities up here and all its regions as far as the great sea of the rising sun and from the banks of the Euphrates, the country of the Hittites. From the Euphrates, he's moving west now, and he is conquering the country of the Hittites, the Amuru country, which is the area of northwest Mesopotamia in its full extent, specifically Tyre and Sidon, which is in Lebanon. Israel, this right here is just how it's referred to in the text itself. Israel, Edom, Palestine, meaning the Philistine lands. As far as the shore of the great sea of the setting sun, I made them submit all to my feet, imposing upon them tribute. An interesting thing again, where he is moving, he is coming from Tyre and Sidon, and he is moving down the coast, inland a little bit from the coast, and he is wiping out these people, and some of the people he is wiping out, again, are the Edomites. He is not going over to the Transjordanian area. And then Tiglath-Pileser basically does the same thing in the list that he gives us. He starts out from the border of Mutsur, which is up near Cilicia in Asia Minor, and begins to move down. And again, he mentions some of the cities that are up to the north, Arvad, Sanipu, Bitamon, Salamanu of Moab, Mikini of Ashkelon on the coast, Jehoahaz, again the form that he uses, a king of Judah, Kaushmalaku of Edom, Mutsri is getting over towards Egypt, and then Hano, and the text continues, of Gaza. Again, why is Edom mentioned along with these cities if it really is all the way over in Transjordan? Finally, when Josephus is relating the history of the people of Israel in his Antiquities of the Jews, he again gives us some indication, at least at that time, where he thought Seir was located. He is talking about what happens to Esau after the death of Isaac, and he says, Esau departed from the city of Hebron and left it to his brother and dwelt in Seir and ruled over Idumea. He's combining the two. And Idumea is just the Greek form of the word Edom, and in the time of Josephus, the Idumeans have moved into the southern part of Judah. In Josephus' mind, Edom is located to the south of Judah, not over in Transjordan. And then, finally, talking about Elijah, when he fled Jezebel and went towards Beersheba, he went out into the wilderness of Beersheba, the utmost limits of this country belonging to the tribe of Judah, towards the land of Edom, and there he left his servant and went away into the desert. And notice again, he's pointing to Edom as being by Beersheba, again in the Negev. Well, what's the long and short of it? Basically the following. It seems to me that there is plenty of evidence to say that Edom is really located both on the eastern side of the Arabah and also on the western side of the Arabah. Reason for getting into this in the first place is that it makes more sense out of a lot of the stories that you read in the scripture. So it's not just an exercise in historical geography. It also turns out to make the readings of these stories and where they occurred make a little more sense. And hence, I suspect, maybe one of these days, as more maps are made, Edom, instead of being limited here on the eastern part of Transjordan, I'd like to think of it as putting Edom all the way over from the Negev, over the Transjordan, including the Arabah, and leaving it as a country, same as Seir, but really spanning that whole area of the south from one side of the rift all the way to the other side of the rift. I really think that takes the evidence. That is a better handling of the evidence. That's really a better model for handling the evidence of Edom, both from the scripture and also from the extra-biblical sources. I think it ties the material together much better than keeping it in the traditional location. And with that, I will end. Thank you very much. I'll be happy to answer questions.
What would the area call it that, if they're describing it?
Basically, they'll refer to it as the Negev. Negev to the southern part, the wilderness of Paran, northern Sinai, etc. But generally, when you see Edom written in the books, they're referring to this southeastern Transjordanian area.
How does that affect the passage of the area? If you're going around, you know, you're going to be around the house, does that affect all of the
No, because if Edom's still over here on that side, you can still go around it, but basically they're going a bit south, And coming around Edom and Moab, the part that's over here in Transjordan, going up north, crossing over, and going by Jericho, coming down by the plains of Moab. Here's something really interesting in connection with that, however. Notice in the Numbers passage, Numbers chapter 20, there is reference to the king's highway. Let me just find it here a second. In connection with the story of the Exodus. Verse 17 says the following, "Please let us pass through your country. We will not go through any field or vineyard or drink water from any well. We will travel along the king's highway and not turn to the right or to the left until we have passed through your territory." The highway is again implied in verse 19. In verse 20, in chapter 21, verse 22, it is mentioned again. When he says to Sihon, king of the Amorites, "Let us pass through your country, and we will not turn aside to any field or vineyard or drink water from any well. We will travel along the king's highway until we have passed through your territory." And then this is again implied in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 27. Now, what the Israelites are doing is the following. They are at Kadesh Barnea, and they are asking for permission to move along the king's highway. Generally, the king's highway is put and Damascus. And it is thought to be a Transjordanian highway. However, is it not possible that if they are at Kadesh Barnea, that what the king's highway is actually referring to is the way from Kadesh Barnea through the wilderness of Zin, and then swinging around to the east side of Moab, and going through the area of Gilead, and finally going to Damascus? The interesting thing is that there is a road today that goes from Kadesh Barnea down to the Arava, and in Arabic it's called Darb es-Sultan, which literally translated means the way of the king. So it may be that we have a preservation of the name, the King's Highway, and they actually refer to an east-west part of the road that goes from Kadesh Barnea to the Arava, rather than going from a lot north up to the Arava and then farther north to Moab and Edom. Again, a suggestion. Maybe King's Highway just refers to an important road and it's used generally. But there are only four occurrences. There are two occurrences where it's mentioned in Scripture and two others where it's implied. The same road is implied. And with that, connecting that along with the position of Kadesh Barnea, I think there's good evidence that maybe the King's Highway, or at least the southern part of the King's Highway, really went from Kadesh Barnea east, maybe even continued all the way from Kadesh Barnea to the west as well. Other questions? I was going to say, why didn't he stick him in New York? You can do that, yes. You can live year-round. There are a couple things on that. First of all, the weather pattern here is not quite as comfortable as it is here in Pennsylvania. Second, you've got great trade routes that run through here because of the great desert. This is the connection between Mesopotamia and Egypt and the great empires that existed there. And also the connection where the great armies would go back and forth. Why put them here? As one person had said, it's a testing ground of faith. Because people who live in this area really have to depend on the Lord for two things. First of all, the proper weather for the early rains and the later rains and the winter rains to come in order to give them the proper moisture that they need for their crops. And they also have to depend upon the Lord in order to keep the enemies at bay. And he uses those two factors. He says to the people, if you obey my commandments, the weather will work out all right for you, and the armies will work out all right for you. But if you disobey, this is what's going to happen, and there's really no more ideal place to have those things happen than right here. So I think it's all tied in to how the land builds faith in the people, or was supposed to build faith in the people who live there. Yeah, unfortunately, all the petroleum is in the surrounding nations.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, not
that. That general vicinity, sure.
Sure. Really the most important part of the world right now.
Yeah, that's true. But even they don't have too much of it. They produce about 3% of their own oil consumption, and the rest they have to buy. I know there are people who are digging for oil there, but it doesn't seem to be the right geologic formation in order to have a lot of oil in that place. where they did have the Abu Rudesh oil fields, went back to Egypt. Yes? The east-west, going east-west down here in the Negev, yes, there are difficulties, but it's not quite as formidable as going east-west across the Arava. But there is a very nice connection from the Zin because it slowly goes down and connects in with the Arava. But once you get to the east there, then you've got to climb some rather steep ascents in order to get up here into the Transjordanian Plateau.
Yeah, what boundary line would you outline?
For the southern boundary of Judah?
Yeah.
All right. Yes, I feel that was the northern boundary of Edom because it's given as the southern boundary of Judah, which is said to be right along Edom. And hence, that seems to me to have been the separation line. No, no, it isn't. Only to the eastern part along the Zin do you have a barrier there. But once you get into the area of Beersheba and Arad and continue to move a little farther west, then it becomes less formidable. Then it's very easy to move through there. I should say easier to move through there. It's not very easy.
Then are there geographical areas that connect the eastern and the western parts of
the Negev?
Now,
for Edom. Yes. All the trade routes that go across here pick out those areas, and the trade routes would be the connecting routes then between the eastern and western part of Edom.
All along
here. Yeah, frankly, that one reference to the feeding or the watering of the flocks over here leads me to believe that the Edomites really had roamed all through here. But in terms of a boundary, you have kind of a settled situation and a semi-nomadic situation, and it seems that the Edomites are living in certain cities in their land, like Bozra, but on the other hand, it appears that they're roaming this western part as well. So you have kind of a combination, or various tribes. If you read the account of the tribes that attach themselves to the Israelites, you have like the Kenites, who are nomadic tribes, but really come in and sort of join themselves to the Israelite. And perhaps Edom was a confederation of a number of tribes, some of them inhabiting the eastern part, some of them inhabiting the western part. But yes, this Arava was never really much of a barrier to people moving back and forth. And later on, when the Nabataeans came in, they too controlled all this area and went all the way across into the northern part, into the Negev. And that really wasn't much of a barrier. Because it's really rather simple to move into that area. Simple in the sense of being able to move a population in, not simple in the sense that you have smooth paths, but you have communication routes that you can use. Mike.
Archaeologically, on the cities that are in the traditional region, Hasn't there been any findings?
Are you talking about the Negev, or are you talking about the area of
Edom, you know, extended to the west?
Right.
Hasn't there been any finds that have been found in any of the sites in the west that correlate to finds that have been found in traditional Edom?
Right, except for this Negev ware that is around the area here, this crude pottery, which shows a more nomadic type of existence. Part of it is because these sites have not been excavated. The Negev, however, has been excavated or examined rather thoroughly. And again, you find these sites from the time of David. And after Solomon lost ground, after his son Rehoboam, then what you find is that the line of forts go from Arad to Beersheba to Gerar, etc., in the northern part of the Negev, and that was considered then to be the place to fortify themselves against the people of the south. And except for like Kadesh Barnea and another place farther on down south that's been excavated, there you had Judean forts all through the history of Judah. But that after David, they weren't too concerned about actually fortifying this area heavily. They felt that their line of forts at the bottom part, the southern part of Judah, was enough. But as I say, there are some areas that have been excavated that do show Judean forts, one at Kadesh Barnea and the other one farther south. Scott?
I think the first thing that you're thinking about the Judah Israel around here, you're saying that they went through the Egyptian Valley area around the southern end of Eastern Judah?
Basically, yes, from Kadesh Barnea, they might have even backtracked a little bit because they went to Mount Hor and then probably came farther south or stuck along the Zin. And then when they got to this side, instead of cutting through, they went around by the wilderness route rather than following the king's highway that went through the two nations. Through the western part, sure, to a certain extent. Yeah, to a certain extent going through. But the northern part of that area, or in the eastern part of the western of the Negev. But once they get over to the other side, skirting around them and going along the desert route, and you would still say you've gone around Edom. But again, you have to remember that you're talking about the whole area here, both east and west. At least that would be the proposal that I would make. Other questions? That I don't know. I have to investigate. Pushed out of there down to this area. Conceivably, I'm thinking, however, again of the border description that talks about Edom being there, not just Mount Seir. See, in the Pentateuch, you do have Edom referred to as being in Mount Seir. I'd have to check that out. We know, however, that the Edomites took over Mount Seir. So it could be that Mount Seir refers more to the area that is in the Negev, whereas Edom refers to the people who have inhabited that along with the other area over to the east. That would be an interesting point to search out.
Is Mount Seir an actual mountain, or is it just a name for the area?
Any elevated area, broad elevated area, would be called a mount. Ephraim, for example, which is kind of a broad mountainous dome to the north of Jerusalem, is called Mount Ephraim at times. So it's not just an actual mountain, but kind of a higher elevated area, which fits very nicely, again, with the Negev. As you move south, it goes up in elevation. It goes up to some, 2,000, 2,500 feet, roughly. Well, I hope I've given you something to think about. And when you read Edom and Esau and Seir in the Bible from now on, maybe you'll think of a broader context in which is located instead of a very specific context over in southeast Transjordan. Thank you very much.